This is William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino, and I'm here with
Big John, your big extra large host.
Your girthy host. But I gotta say, Big John, every time I say Big John and you respond, or rather, when you respond that you're Big John, I'm thinking Big John Studd. And I've said that before,
yeah.
But I don't know why. Every single time, you know, you're gonna be at your, I'll be at your funeral one day. You're gonna say a few words, you know, Big John Studd.
Well, you know, I used to work with the guy, so that fits.
Yeah, I can picture your wife hollering out, "Yes, he was." A little kudos to the dead man.
Yeah,
wow. As she leaves with another guy on the arm.
Yeah, right. Of course.
I always tell my wife, just make sure he can pay the rent on his own. So, Big John.
Yes.
Major League Baseball is actually having a contest that just ended. It was,
yeah.
The other day was the final day for the entry. I saw it as I was rummaging through all the news notes. And I just thought it would be a fun segment. Let's talk baseball. Plus,
sure.
Pete Rose is in the news again as the man being born in the wrong era. And I kind of agree to an extent. And then we're going to talk a little bit about TNT. But first of all, real quick, what's your favorite baseball movie off the cuff?
I probably have to say Major League.
Tom Berenger and Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Mainly because, first of all, I'm partial to comedies. I think we've talked about this before. In general, I just like comedy. So if you could get a good baseball movie that involves comedic premises, I'm all in. And I think Major League was probably the best one like that.
You know, I think baseball movies are the one movie that has to have the classic Hollywood formula. You have to leave that movie having felt something, because that's what baseball is all about, tugging at our heartstrings about America, the pastime, the relationship with fathers. It's just that good all-American feel. And whether you agree with it or not, it's one of those things I think you can't help. It's like the national anthem. People may be complaining about it, but those same people complaining, they'll be singing along. It's just something ingrained in us.
Well, I definitely agree with you. Perhaps when we were kids, we could talk about it, but I don't know if that's the case anymore. I mean, baseball was definitely interwoven into the American societal fabric. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
It was the preeminent sport, and it was a uniquely American sport for a long time. So,
I can answer that.
I don't know if it still is or not, but yeah, I agree with you, though.
Yeah. I mean, I believe we're the last generation. We're the last generation who could come in on a Saturday morning and the World Series was on as a kid.
Yeah.
On Saturday, because
yeah.
I was a huge Big Red Machine fan, and I could tell you every player. I think actually what happened with baseball is obviously the rise of the NFL with the direct TV package, the marketing, the physicality, the brutalness, the violence, and we're no different than the fans during the Roman era.
Yeah.
You know, so fast sports entertain us, and I just actually, what do they call it on Getter? I Gettered? Or maybe,
well,
I gagged a response to somebody and said that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, baseball is not a TV-friendly sport. I mean, it's easy to film, but it's not made to take advantage of TV, whereas football is. Baseball is meant to be attended in person, I think. Like, football games are nice, but honestly, I haven't been to a live NFL game in years because it's more enjoyable from my couch in front of my big TV, right?
That's the blackout rule.
That if it's not sold out, right, which almost never happens anymore.
Well, they cheat now.
Yeah.
An advertiser usually swoops in and buys the last 15, 20.
Yeah, $1,000. Because they'll make more money anyway. But
exactly.
But the other thing also is that baseball was even today, I think, is meant to be seen live. Like, if you go to a baseball game now and you get to sit in the stands and have a beer, enjoy the nice weather, make a day of it. And
Correct. It's
usually a great bonding experience between parents and children. I was going to say father and son, but who knows in this age, you know, if it's mother and daughter as well. But
the problem with that, Big John, now is, and it's one reason baseball has tried to address this, shortening the game. Because I'll be honest, by the time you get to the seventh inning stretch, and this is true about baseball, this is why I believe baseball is a slowly dying sport. And when I say slowly dying, I'm talking about Big John and I will be dead, and maybe our kids will still be alive and it'll be around. But I think within the next 100 years, because it's slowness, it's going to die. But by the seventh inning stretch, I had not been to a baseball game the last 15, 20 years where I'm not looking at the watch. I can't tell you the last time I was actually at a great baseball game, because that's what the playoffs are for. They're few and far between. And for me, right, and millions of others, it's usually a great pitcher's duel. Some people like to see the home runs with Sosa and and McGuire were battling it out, etc. We'll get into all of this. But should Pete Rose be allowed back into baseball, considering how Major League Baseball is to gambling, as to what a lady of the evening is to a sailor? You know, Pete Rose is a poster child for everything wrong with gambling, and yet we just had the first, maybe the first professional player, but the first Major League Baseball player endorse a sports book. You know, finally, we update you with our newest podcast to come, TNT, and no, we're not talking Tom and Jerry. Yeah. So let's get right into it. So off the top of my mind, there's two movies that come to me in terms of favorite, and that is The Natural and 8 Men Out. Now, The Natural isn't one that comes to mind. When I think of baseball movies, I don't know why, but 8 Men Out, that it just always, to me, I saw it as a kid, and we've talked about the big picture.
Yeah.
So when I saw that movie, I was looking at it, even as a kid, from the big picture, how each move. But I think why I'll never forget that movie is because it's the first time I learned about, it's not bigger government, it's not politics, but the powers that be that can come down to destroy somebody who's innocent. Sure. And that's when I discovered who Shoeless Joe Jackson was.
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
You know, guilty by association.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think I've never forgotten that. And I think that, to me, this, all, everything out of that movie, that's what I left the way with. And maybe that helped create an impression of me of society and the little guy.
It did. And I mean, look, there's certainly been controversy. I mean, most historians now will probably agree that Shoeless Joe Jackson had really nothing to do with throwing the 1919 World Series. The Blacks,
for the audience, his that is based off his numbers.
Right. He had a great series. Right. He didn't do anything that would be indicative of throwing the series. You might make an argument that he's guilty simply because he didn't rat out his teammates. You know, like, there's a lot of that. Like, when they arrest mob figures, even if you weren't the guy pulling the trigger, people assume you're guilty, and perhaps rightly so, because you knew about it. And you should have reported, even though everybody says don't rat, don't think. The truth is, if you witness a crime, you should be reporting it. So to the extent that Shoeless Joe Jackson knew about it but didn't report his teammates, he's guilty in that sense. But guilty of actually throwing the series? No. I don't think anybody believes that.
But you know, John, at the end of the day, it's just, they may have hammered him too. Because, you know, good and well, somebody in that system was like, just keep your mouth shut.
Nobody, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
I'm saying there's a possibility of that. But in terms of movies, I don't know. Do you want to go down the list and just
get that? Yes, we're going to talk about that. So for the audience, you know, baseball is technically older than the movies. In fact, in researching for this topic, and I say that a lot, and the reason I say that a lot is that maybe a little pride, but we want to bring you a show. Where you may leave having learned something.
Right.
And I ran across it's called, if you go to YouTube, it's called Early Baseball Film by Thomas Edison, 1898. And in the comments,
it was called The Ball Game.
That was the
ball game, yeah.
It's just like 15 or 20 seconds. It just shows the guy hitting and running the first base. And what's ironic is below, you can see the people describing who it is, what they went on to do, et cetera, et cetera. I am not a fan of Edison as a human being. He was a scumbag, vile, evil. He would kill to get what he wanted, not necessarily humans, but animals. And I'm thinking about electricity here. But he was a scumbag. But he was innovative, he was an entrepreneur, and
he was a genius. It's one of those great contradictions in life. He was a genius, and he certainly improved life for a lot of society. But like you said, he was an asshole human being. Like a lot of people will say the same thing about Steve Jobs.
Jobs. So, I knew you were going there.
So like, it's just one of those contradictions you have to live with, right? I mean, he was a genius, but he was an asshole. So you kind of put it together. But you're right. He was testing out his new filming equipment and he decided, and I think the game was Rutgers versus
somebody in Jersey.
So it was in Jersey. So it was Rutgers.
Jersey something is one of the guys.
I forget.
But for the audience, go out there. It's grainy, but it's history.
It's history,
and the other thing I learned is that the first baseball movies were actually had baseball stars. Technically, the first movie stars of Hollywood were probably already established baseball stars through some of those early right. movies. And it mentions in my research, it came out to a few names. And what I got out of it is how fleeting fame is. These were big names back then. And when I say big names, because we were not a fragmented society. So most people got all their news, entertainment, sports, etc., through just a couple of channels, you know. So a hat tip to Will Leitch, 25 of the best baseball movies ever. John, what was the first baseball movie?
Right off the bat?
That's right. Technically there could be some argument, but that's what's considered the first baseball movie. The political tie is it came out the same year as the Democrat Party's fan favorite film, The Birth of a Nation.
Yeah, D.W. Griffith.
By Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, Birth of a Nation is what it is. It was a Klan film, basically. Mm-hmm. But you have to
Screen and Beloved by Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
Yeah, he had a showing at the White House for it.
I believe you. But I don't know exactly all of that, but here's the thing. You have to take into account that at the time, watching movies was like watching magic. You know, so there's the technical experience of watching something like Birth of a Nation or Right Off the Bat. Because, can you imagine if all of a sudden you could go into your living room and turn on a 3D hologram like they have in Star Trek, where everything you could touch the images and you could interact with the images as if it was an alternate reality, right?
No, John, you're right. The truth of the matter is, Birth of a Nation is well known for the message the vile message the Democrat Party was sending, but it's also revered because it was one of the greatest technological breakthroughs.
Yes, absolutely. That's all I'm saying. It's much like
Is that an oxymoron? Would you call that an oxymoron?
It's not an oxymoron. I would think a dichotomy is a better explanation. It's two natures for the same thing, right?
They're not necessarily
opposites, which is what oxymoronic means. It means it's opposite. Like when you say jumbo shrimp.
Yeah, and those two aren't really opposite. Those are societal norms and that's why. And you know what though, it's one of the few things where I've seen no pushback from anybody, but that's probably because the film's so old, people don't even understand what the film's about when people talk about it. All right, so the reason we're doing a baseball show is MLB was having a baseball contest. Big John and I filled out our brackets. There were 16 movies.
Right.
Out of those 16 movies, John, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them I have never seen or I saw them and just don't remember them.
Okay.
But like The Sandlot. I'm like, I think I saw that like on HBO or something because that's a little older from the 90s.
Ironically, it was on HBO this past weekend. So just like dumb luck, I had just seen it again.
Let's talk about each one as we go down. We'll just have some fun with this and hopefully help the audience bring back some nice, great memories as kids or even as moments with their family. Yeah.
So what's Field the first dreams, matchup?
What's the Field first of matchup? Dreams versus Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah.
To me, the Field of Dreams, it's not overrated, but it's arguably probably the best known baseball movie, you know?
I don't know if that's true, but I will say, compared to Angels in the Outfield was basically like a movie made for 7-year-olds, which is fine, but considering it as an adult, I don't know, because it just doesn't play well. You know, it's like these mystical things. So, yeah, I voted for Field of Dreams in that matchup myself.
Yeah, I mean, that was a no-brainer, wasn't it? At the end of the day, it's a situation of the obvious. What was the next film? What was the next battle there, John?
The next battle was The Natural versus For Love of the Game.
I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah. You already said you think The Natural was your favorite movie.
Right. And what makes The Natural magical for me as a kid, even to this day as an adult, some of my most famous books – and movies that I read are the ones that play off the history, meaning they'll go back in time to an actual historical event with real characters. And people don't realize The Natural was based off of an actual person. Obviously, slightly based off the story.
A dramatization.
Yes. And it was based off of a player who actually got stabbed by a woman, right. A serial killer trying to take out the stars of the sports. And Robert Redford did a good job. It was a sappy movie.
Yes.
I will call it the male guy's chick flick, where you can take the girl to and you'll both enjoy it.
Yeah, it definitely is a movie that's based on sentimentality, and it's also a movie that you could take your girlfriend, wife, or whatever to. And they probably wouldn't object to it being a baseball movie. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, in that matchup too, I took The Natural as well.
And for Love of the Game, I don't even remember that movie, to be quite honest. And ironically, it had Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner had a nice little run in the 90s, with some long, boring movies.
But I think for Love of the Game, he actually was nominated for a Raspberry.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
For being one of the worst actors that year. I could be wrong, but that's the way I remember it. But yeah, that's the Love of the Game really doesn't hold up to The Natural.
So people, if you haven't seen The Natural, which I'm assuming a lot of you haven't, because it came out, I want to say, right about the 90s sometimes, it's very iconic in film lore because of this one scene that Robert Redford hit. And I'm not giving anything away, because it was in the previews.
Beautifully
hitting
shot.
The ball.
Beautifully
and I want to say it was in Chicago, in Wrigley. And
yeah.
Knocking out all the lights out. And
hitting a home, it was a beautifully, look, I think the movie is sappy, to be honest with you. It's not one of my favorites. But that cinematic thing of him in the bottom of the ninth, hitting the home run to win the game, right after he started bleeding from the old wound he suffered as a young player from this attack, the ball rising majestically, knocking out the lights, and then as he's rounding the bases in slow motion, you have the sparkles and the
exactly the sparkles is what kind of did
and the lights, you know. So from a cinematic point of view, beautifully shot scene. But the movie overall is it's very average for me. It's very sad.
Right. No. And I can see that. But what also sold that movie was the what do they call it? The costuming. The era.
Oh, it was it was very authentic looking. The old wool uniforms. It looked very authentic.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where it all comes together. It's like there's no one. You can't point the one something out of the movie and go, that's what did it. It was truly a whole ensemble piece.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking actors, but from the set production to the directing.
All the actors as well, right? Because who was in it? It was
Robert Redford,
Glenn Close, right?
You know what? That's a good question. I think
Glenn Close was his love interest. And then the guy who was, I forget his name, Prosky, the manager. But anyway, so I think that was a better shot movie visually than it was story-wise, which for me is always a 50-50. But that's okay.
You know, I was reading a couple of articles, and all the critics were, at least in this panel, they all loved it, like I did. And I was shocked at how most of them thought Field of Dreams is overrated. All right. So here's two movies, John. I can't remember if I saw The Sandlot versus The Perfect Game. And I vaguely remember The Perfect Game. And I guess technically speaking, politically speaking, I should know that one inside and out as a Latino, because it's about a group of Mexican kids, The Perfect Game, who are the first non-U.S. team to win the Little League World Series.
Right.
And honestly, I stopped watching movies that want to make a political point. Maybe I don't know when this came out. If it came out the last 10 years, then I purposely didn't watch it because I'm not 12. I don't need to be indoctrinated.
Again, I don't know if it was making a political point or if it's just the story of the first non-U.S. team to win the Little League. I tend not to read as much political influence in those types of movies, but I picked The Sandlot. I think The Sandlot. And again, now you're talking about movies that should appeal to people who are like in their teens, right?
And for the record, The Sandlot is pretty much baseball is centering around these kids' misadventures.
Right. It was a summer where it's almost like the Wonder Years, where there's a guy recalling his youth and what moving to a new town, the only friends he ever made were on The Sandlot. And his best friend came from The Sandlot. And then it's this experience. Think of it like The Goonies or Lean on Me.
Exactly.
But it just has like a baseball theme to it. It centers around The Sandlot. So I picked The Sandlot in that one.
You know what? When I did the bracket, I found that spot blank. You know, on the flip side, the Perfect Game is based on a true story. A group of boys from Monterrey, Mexico become the first non-U.S. team right. to win the Little League World Series. I'm trying to find out what year. It came out in 2009. So it was right at the beginning of identity politics. And, you know what? As an adult at that point, Big John, I liked the movies to be entertained. I just had no desire. And I think America agreed with me. I never heard of this movie being a breakout hit, a big monster hit. So maybe it was a nice little movie. These are nice movies in showing some history. But the Little League has never really interested me at all. The Little League World Series or that. Whenever that comes on, I just merely change the channel. Right. Is that terrible or what?
Fair enough.
Yeah. Okay. So in that choice, like I told you, my bracket, I didn't even realize I hadn't selected the one, but I gave my preference to The Sandlot because I think I saw that one.
Right. Yeah, I did The Sandlot too in that one, yeah.
All right. Now, here's a classic. Now, people, this movie has been remade, I want to say, at least once in the past 10 years, and it was terrible. It was remakes are becoming – remakes, Big John, at one time were special. I mean, the movie would be 20 to 50 years old. It would be a big deal for Hollywood, the big stars. Now they're spitting out remakes faster than a sailor goes through a woman on payday.
Yeah.
You know? It's a situation in which they just come, they just go. And I'm being serious.
Yeah,
Total Recall. Ray Schwarzenegger movie. Do you remember the sequel?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Total Recall, for example. Great Schwarzenegger movie. Do you remember the sequel?
I have no idea.
Yeah. See, and that's my point is there's so many of them. The Bad News Bears is the movie we're talking about.
Right. And by the way, there's a difference between a sequel and a remake. A sequel is part two, if you want to think of it that way. So
right.
The Godfather is off, part two is often referred to as the greatest sequel of all time. If you think of all the Star Wars movies, it's one sequel after another.
Right.
A remake is like what happened to the Bad News Bears, where you had this great movie, the original with Walter Matthau and I think a 12-year-old.
Tatum O'Neal.
And a 12-year-old.
Tatum O'Neal, because I had a crush on her at that time.
Jodie Foster. 12-year-old Jodie Foster.
Tatum O'Neal.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tatum O'Neal, you're right, not Jodie Foster. I get the two confused. Tatum O'Neal, you're right. So that movie to me, and again, I grew up with that movie, a clear winner over Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year was about a high school teacher who made a comeback at an advanced age, if I recall, right?
No, was it Kevin Costner?
Sorry. Rookie of the Year, I confused it with The Rookie. Rookie of the Year, wasn't it with a kid who had some sort of arm surgery for some reason, and then he became...
Oh, that's right, and then he could pitch over 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So it's kind of Disney-esque. This is a good comparison. Like, for example, The Natural versus the Field of Dreams versus Angels of the Outfield. I'm like, you know, that's a blowout bracket there.
Yeah.
You know, but this one here, The Rookie of the Year versus The Bad News Bears. The Bad News Bears was... about a team of misfits people, and Walter Matthau had to come in, and Tatum O'Neal was the girl. Obviously, it's a boys' game, and this is the 70s.
It's the early 70s,
The kid with a great arm, I think, if I remember correctly. Whereas Rookie of the Year is, it's like, even as a kid, you're like, well, that could be plausible. And why do we say that? Because literally every kid has actually been on a crappy team at one point or another. That's just how life works. So we could relate to the Bad News Bears. We could relate to that era and the coach who they didn't talk to us. How you doing, John? More like, John, get your ass out there and say,
oh, wow. Walter Matthau was superb in that movie. As the grumpy.
That's what made it good.
Yeah, the grumpy, horrible person coach.
The grumpy drunk. I can't remember the drunk, drinking
on the sideline. The sponsor of the team was a bail bondsman. Chico's Bail Bonds. I even remember the name of the team, right? Chico's Bail Bonds.
The name of my best man, Chico.
Right. So in that matchup, no doubt, Bad News Bears.
Yeah. All right. Then comes The League of Their Own versus The Rookie. First of all, let's talk about The Rookie. I'm trying to remember The Rookie, actually.
Another one with Costner. I think, and he played, it's based on a true life story of a career minor leaguer who retires, becomes a high school coach or a college coach, and his team makes a bet with him. If we win the championship, you have try out for a major league team. And it turns out that the guy has like 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yep.
And he actually got a cup of coffee with the Rangers, you know, like as a reliever. So that's what The Rookie is about.
And it is with Dennis Quaid.
Oh, Dennis Quaid, not Kevin Costner, right? Sorry, my memory's gone. But anyway, and League of Their Own is the story, again, fictionalized a bit, about the Women's Professional Baseball League which was operating during World War II, essentially.
True story. Because or dramatization.
True story. All the men were off fighting war, like Ted Williams, for the most part. All the big stars were drafted back then. They didn't get deferments. So
actually, most of them volunteered.
Or they volunteered. You're right. Back then. You're right. You're right. And
they cared.
So women stepped in. You know, the thing about World War II is women stepped into the factories because they had to, right?
And who was the most famous woman?
Rosie the Riveter.
That's right, Rosie the Riveter.
And baseball.
Get bigger guns than us.
We can do it, gals. But they also play baseball because people needed a distraction, and it's a great movie. I gave it to League of Their Own. Tom Hanks is great in it.
The League of Their Own is nothing like these kid movies, but it's a comedy, and yet it's
a very subtle comedy.
Any baseball movie out there, literally, just because of the chemistry of the women, Tom Hanks's performance. And
Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, Rosie O'Donnell.
Rosie O'Donnell had a great performance there before she became the vile, ugly swine.
Madonna was in it too. Madonna.
Yes, Madonna.
All the way May, yes.
Yeah. So, it was an Oscar. Gina Davis, I think, was
Gina
the
Davis, yes, she was the catcher. You had the girl, what was her name? Lori something or other. She was one of those Riot Girl, Tank Girls type of thing, I think.
Tank Girl. That's a cool classic.
Yeah, Lori something. I don't remember her name. But anyway, so it was a great ensemble.
Be bigger.
Yeah, and it was
never
great,
became bigger.
And it was a great ensemble cast and a great story. So yeah, I'll take League of Their Own in that matchup. So far, we're lining up. We've got pretty much the same picks.
Yeah, then came 42 versus 8 Men Out. I know the Jackie Robinson. I don't watch bios when it's fully based on the bio. So for example, like we've talked about with Winning Time and the Lakers, you guys are enjoying the hell out of it because it's a dramatization.
Right.
You know? So I'm pretty sure I'd enjoy it too, but pure play bios, I've read it on history in a book, on the internet, everywhere. So I didn't even bother, you know. And by then, when 42 came out, we were in the heat of identity politics. So maybe that did help me out. And the reason I say that is when you get into such a divided political sphere, this is what happens. Good movies aren't watched. In our case, with streaming and 10 zillion other movies, it's easy to find something else to watch. But 42 got a lot of accolades. I'm assuming you saw that.
I loved 42, and I have to tell you, this was one of the two in the first round of movies they had that I had a tough decision to make. I picked 42. I don't like 8 Men Out. I shouldn't say I don't like 8 Men Out. I liked 42 better. I don't think Jackie Robinson gets a lot of accolades, deservedly. But in some ways, I think he doesn't get enough accolades.
I think he does. I think what's been drowned out are the Satchel Pages of the world.
Well, I was going to say
who trailblazed it for him, and that, that's a big disgrace because the Negro League had players who were actually better.
Absolutely, Satchel Paige, Josh.
Yeah,
Fitz.
They were better than Jackie. But what did Jackie fit?
Jackie fit
the role where his bosses said white America will accept you.
Well, yeah.
They may not accept these guys. No, that's what it boiled down to.
No. Branch
boiled down to acceptance. So they chose Jackie Robinson for other reasons, too. But that was a big reason.
Well, I was going to say, in some ways, he doesn't get enough accolades because there were better Negro, Black, African-American, whatever the right term you want to use in this context is. There were better players. You mentioned Satchel Paige. Josh Gibson, some people were saying, was better than Babe Ruth. He was a catcher in the Negro Leagues, had more power than Ruth. He was reputedly the only player to hit a baseball out of the old Yankee Stadium. Nobody had ever done that. Josh Gibson was the only one, allegedly, that did that, according to the sources at the time. So then the question was, why did the Brooklyn Dodgers pick Jackie Robinson? It was because of his character. The Dodgers felt that he had the personality where he would be able to withstand all the racism, the
temperament. Yeah, that was part of it.
He had the right temperament. He was in the service. He was well spoken, if that means anything to anybody.
Conservative. In other words, he had the values of America.
He was very restrained, at least publicly.
Oh, no. Jackie Robinson was a great player.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that one of the downsides that people in history have forgotten, except for the people who actually follow history, is what – I don't want to say it's a disgrace, but the ignoring of other great players. Because at the end of the day, we are in a political divisive culture, society, where it's easy to hate one another. But what I always tell people, and why I'm battling, you know, because of my family, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm battling also because you can hate somebody or something because you're looking at it from afar. And when you start to encounter or learn these stories at a close up and in detail, if you are truly human, meaning you care about other people, right, you'll see the travesty and you will look beyond that skin color. You'll look beyond that culture and you'll see a human being. Well, so when I look at the Negro League, I don't look at a Negro League. I look at human beings. I know I'm not copying that. I'm just saying how I feel. I view the Satchel Paiges as these were human beings who busted their tail, worked their tails off. And at the end of the day, they really didn't. It's a cycle of life where you have generations blazing the trail for you. Yet when they leave this earth, they really gain nothing for themselves as much as what they gained and gave society.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's just like you said, that's just reality. Satchel Paige, especially, played in the major leagues. First of all, nobody knew how old he really was.
Right.
Because his birth records had been lost or not kept or whatever. He could have been anywhere from 50 to 60 when he retired. Nobody really knows.
Yeah.
He was an older man when he was still pitching. Minnie Minoso was another guy. I think he's the oldest player to ever get a hit in the major leagues, you know. So a lot of these guys who were in the Negro Leagues initially, who were stars of the Negro Leagues, without a doubt, could have been major league stars, you know, and you're right. But back to the movies, I picked 42, you picked Eight Men Out. So that's the first one we've diverged on.
Right, and I picked Eight Men Out. Again, I talked about it earlier. To me, Eight Men Out was just a movie that enlightened me from the perspective of history and corruption and the destruction of the innocent. So it kind of encompassed a lot for me in that movie. As far as remembering the movie, I saw it once, and that was on HBO. And I remember, and I'll never forget because he's famous, is how young, I mean, now that I'm older, how young John Cusack was in getting his start. The movie came out in 1988.
Right.
So it's been around for a while. But to me, it brings everything. It brings history, a good story. It's not your traditional feel-good baseball movie. It's your traditional, this is what baseball was. And again, right, the scenery. And maybe as a kid, the Big Red Machine was my favorite team. So I had that tie-in. It was the Reds, right, the Cincinnati Reds that won that World Series. So overall, and it was a great cast. As I said, I had John Cusack, Jason Alexander. Actually, John Mahoney. People who don't know John Mahoney was in Frasier, played the father.
He was the father in Frasier.
You know,
yeah.
Michael Rooker, Charlie Sheen, D.B. Sweeney. These were the young studs of that era, you know, coming up. It even had Studs Terkel. So it was a good movie. I enjoyed it, and it kind of made its impact. So, and because I haven't seen 42, and I probably will eventually see 42,
sure,
you know, when it comes on. So, but I went with 8 Men Out because that is the standalone, my favorite. When I think baseball movies, it's the first one that always comes to mind. Now, here's one that should be a fun one. Major League versus Trouble with a Curve. I'm a huge Clint Eastwood fan. I can say I've literally seen every movie, but when this movie came out, it kind of came and went. And maybe because it didn't get good reviews, it was a mediocre movie in terms of his financial hits. And overall, I kind of came and went. It was on the boob tube once, and I turned it on, and I changed the channel. So Major League was our era as kids, you know, as we were the young adults coming in.
Yeah, Major League, I already said that's probably my favorite one, so you know how my bracket is going to eventually turn out, but Trouble with the Curve, I didn't like. I think it's Clint Eastwood slowly becoming a woman in old age. Everything he has now is about emotions and deep feelings and all that. It's
I don't know. You think that Sniper movie, that true story, was a feel good movie?
Which one?
American Sniper? No, not Sniper. The one with the Navy SEAL who gets captured behind lines after they decide not to kill this.
Oh, that one. Person. Yeah. I mean the ones he stars in, I guess, because like when you think about Gran Torino, when you think about Trouble with the Curve, when you think about Million Dollar Baby, these are all movies that Clint both directed and stars in.
But those were hits. I know where you're going, John.
No, for me personally, I'm saying I hate overly sappy emotional movies. I hate them.
No, I get that. I'm the same way. And the truth of the matter is, the movies you mentioned outside of Trouble with the Curve were all deep.
Oh, dramas. I agree.
Trouble with the Curve, I think, was more along the Disney-esque lines.
It was supposed to be Amy Adams, who plays his daughter, reconnecting with her father, because he's an old baseball scout. He's been on the road his whole life. So it was supposed to be her reconnecting with him via baseball, right?
So,
I could say, listen, like I said, it's Clint Eastwood slowly turning into a woman in his old age. Because every chick I know loved that movie. So it's a chick flick. And
it didn't make money compared to his others.
Doesn't matter. It's a chick flick.
My point. Most people would agree with you. That's not a Clint Eastwood movie. Yeah. It's kind of like the one that just came out or is coming out, where he plays his old worn down cowboy. Yeah, of course he has to play those roles now.
It's the same
thing. But he goes to Mexico to rescue this little kid, and they bond coming up or something of that nature. Or I haven't seen the one with him being a mule. I heard that was pretty good there.
I saw that one. It was entertaining.
But you're right. I mean, the man's in his 90s, still kicking, and he's never abandoned his values for Hollywood, you know? So you can't help but admire him. So tell us about Major League.
Major League is everything I ever went through.
But who was a big star?
Well, Charlie Sheen is in it. Who else is in it?
Tom Berenger.
Tom Berenger, Rene Russo. Wesley Snipes is in it.
Well, who's the big black guy that nobody messed with, like from Jamaica? Who was that actor?
Oh, he's the guy who does. He was in 24, and he also does the Allstate commercials, the guy with the deep voice.
Serrano. That was him?
He played Serrano in the movie. But that's the actor's name, and I apologize, I can't remember his name, but he's one of those great character actors. I think Serrano and that guy are one and the same. I was shocked. I could be wrong, but I think that's
him. You mean the Allstate guy, the guy from 24, played that role?
I think so. Yeah, they shaved his head and gave him a Cuban accent. I'm almost positive. But
I had no idea.
I allow for the possibility that I'm wrong. But anyway, I love Major League, A, because it's a comedy. B, because when I played ball coming up, it was like I could identify with every character on that team. All my friends who are on teams with me can identify ourselves in those movies. Like everybody that I played with that saw that movie says, John, that old pitcher who's got like Vaseline and Vagisil and all that stuff hidden on him, and he puts snot on the ball and all that, he goes, that's you. That's you. Somebody saw you and wrote that role, because I used to pitch in high school and I was never overpowering. I had like 10 different pitches, all of them mediocre, but you never knew what was coming. So the guy says, that's you, you know. And then there was this other guy we knew who was Charlie Sheen, you know, like he would show up.
There's always a Charlie Sheen. That's right. Why I think it was a big hit. And John, you're right. Dennis Haysbert.
There you go.
Good memory. I would never have guessed. I just remember he was hilarious in the movie. Yeah, and maybe that's because I'm Latino, understanding different cultures.
He was into Santeria.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So when I saw his character, I immediately related, because I'm being stereotypical here, I guess. But when you go back to the jungle in Panama and you go to these little towns, communities, there's always, what do they call it, the snake tongue or whatever type religion?
The charismatic.
Yeah, they get into the tenth revival types. I saw his characters, I kept relating to that. I never experienced that, but I went to one or two of them, because as a kid and somebody's watching you, you get dragged sometimes. But never like, this is our life, this is this.
Have you never been to a Santeria? Have you been around folks who practice Santeria?
That's what I'm saying, I have, but I was American, living not there, so they always protected me, were careful of me, so I never got to experience those type of things.
But I
knew of them. Yeah. I knew it's my grandmother. She was into these tent revivals, you know.
But Santeria isn't even really tent revivals as much as it's like it's a combination of voodoo, Christianity. It's like all rolled into one, and it's like I know.
No, John, I'm referring to the differences of the cultures.
Americans can't relate to
that side of it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that I was familiar with it as much as I was laughing at, they don't get it, because I've been through that experience. What? y'all eat rice and beans every day? Yeah, we do, with a different meat, you know? Yeah, with tacos on the side. That's just a third world, you know? So it was those type of little differences, or the shock when they would see my mom and then they would see me. That's your mom. Every time, that's your mom? Because it's a short little Asian. And then when she would start speaking Spanish, because I never spoke Spanish, I spoke a lot of English. So I really related to Dennis Haysbert. But Charlie Sheen played your typical iconic role of that era. Because remember, that was the John Hughes era, you know? And this wasn't a teen flick like that, but that whole shtick, that's what was oozing out through
the rebel, the planes, cars,
and automobiles type movie.
Right. He was a rebel with a heart of gold. Yeah, it was a great movie. It was a great ensemble cast. And like I said, its genius was that you could relate. Like, if you played baseball at any level, you could relate to that movie because that team had every character that every baseball player has ever been a part of on any level. Like, I don't care if it's Little League, high school, college, minor, it doesn't matter. You've run into those guys.
Exactly. Corbin Burnson was in it, but it also
I forgot about
him. Steve Yeager was there. Bob Uecker. Y'all may not remember Bob Uecker, people, but in the 80s and 90s, there was a battle. Miller Lite or Miller, if I remember. And he was in the middle of – I mean, it was choreographed marketing battle.
It was less filling versus taste great for Miller Lite.
Yeah, and Uecker, he was part of that. But he kind of became famous for just being out there. He was never out there, but he came across as out there.
Well, he was very famous as more as an announcer than a ball player. People forget he used to be a catcher, but he was a horror – even he says he was one of the worst players. He says someone said to him, how did you end up catching somebody like Bob Gibson, I think? And he goes, very simply, he goes, when Bob Gibson threw it, I just picked it up after it rolled to the backstop because he was a horrible catcher. And
he was a Cleveland Indians announcer, right?
At some point, yeah, he was the Indians announcer in real life. He was a regular on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Like, he became more of a pop culture guy. But
you know what? He was one of the first celebrities you could say that was more famous for being Bob Uecker than actually anything he'd done. And I say that because that's what an influencer is. You know, they're just – I mean, let's be honest. Instagram is the digital media of influencers because of soft porn. You know, that's what it's become. All right, let's move on. Now, here's one that's interesting for me. Bull Durham versus Moneyball. Most people would have expected me to go with Moneyball, but the truth is we kind of were the second part of Moneyball in terms of the baseball geeks creating trailblazing analytics and then baseball commercializing it. And that's the part of the world we were in. So I found Moneyball all right. Nothing great. You know, it's just another movie, but I found Bull Durham kind of like Major League. Completely different movies, but from that big hair era, everything was over the top. Just one of those grandiose movies. And again, another baseball movie with who? Kevin Costner. And I can't remember his sidekick, but the pitcher, the young kid. Tim Robbins, that's it. Tim Robbins is an asshole.
And by the way, here's a trivia fact. Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon ended up never married, but they were together for like 25 years. They met on Bull Durham.
Yeah, no.
Susan Sarandon was in Bull Durham.
No. She was hot then. She was one of these women of the era that people don't realize. In the 80s, it was the era of the silicone breasts and skinny woman. Well, Susan Sarandon was top heavy with natural breasts. She had a more mature intellectual look, but she had the body, and she was a great actress. And at the time, she was probably one of the, I would assume, of that era sought out leading ladies. And her and Tim Robbins were really, they actually looked good together on screen at least. Yeah, I met Tim Robbins once, a rude guy, but he's probably in his own world, opening the door into the Starbucks and all that. And Ryan, I think, Ryan Bonini was my former partner, goes, hey, that's Tim Robbins. And I go, yeah, that's an asshole there. Do you see that? Well, pretty rude. He did it in space. I think we were walking. You know, just not paying attention.
Right.
At the time, I was like, what an asshole. You know, how about, I guess I do find it offensive when people won't do a simple excuse me or thank you when you do something like that.
Right, exactly.
Because that's my nature. And I do judge too harshly. I just realized, what an asshole. You know? So, Bull Durham, though, to me was magic. Moneyball was just another good, solid, high Hollywood flick. And to me, it's no contest. Bull Durham has reached iconic status. Moneyball is a wannabe iconic status because the geeks all think it's iconic because it's Moneyball. You know, but Brad Pitt did a great job. So did the fat kid, the comedian, did 21 Jump Street. Jonah Hill is actually a phenomenal actor. I gave him a lot of credit in that movie. That was a coming out movie in terms of how I looked at Jonah Hill, because he'd always done comedy, and he, even though it was a comedic style movie with laughs and all, it wasn't a comedy. It was just a movie that had a lot of laughs in it. What about you, Big John?
I have to tell you, this is probably the closest one I had to choose from. I said there were only one or two. This one's the closest one. I actually went with Moneyball. I enjoyed, like, I had obviously read about Moneyball and Billy Beane, who was the GM who implemented it. And I think it changed baseball, obviously. The way
that's in real life.
Yeah. So much to your point earlier about Eight Men Out being a part of history and trying to portray an era and all that people may not have been aware of. I liked Moneyball for the same reasons that you probably didn't like it, which was I liked it because it did give, I think, an accurate portrayal of how these sabermetrics and statistics and data analysis came in. Being a data geek myself, I can't tell you how many data scientists, professional guys with PhDs in this line of work, all love Moneyball because.
Oh, I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. You know, it showed a lot.
A lot of people don't realize that baseball is probably the best sport to use as a laboratory for data science. Like, when you're trying to teach principles of data science to kids in school coming up, you almost always end up using baseball as the setting for something, right? When you think of
it, John, that's because baseball is the first major sport and it's actually kept all its data.
Yes, I agree.
Track. 160 games a year. But eventually you can do the same thing with any long-term sport, any daily sport.
No, I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying given its status and everything, it is what it is, you know. But because I had picked Major League, I said, well, I've got that sort of ensemble baseball comedy, which is what Bull Durham is. So I said, I'm going to go with Moneyball on this one. So that's where we kind of split. But it was very close.
For the record, I enjoyed Moneyball, but it's no Bull Durham.
All right.
You know? I guess, too, part of it was a lot of the baseball geeks are assholes, too, in our industry. Not towards us, but you just – there's something about that. They truly live up – and I don't care if this stereotype. The thing about me and what I've done in this industry, I can say it, is they tend to be snarky. They tend to have attitudes, and they tend to think they're better than people. So maybe that's something, and not all of them. I've met some great guys in the baseball industry. Ron Chandler's probably the most well-known data guy. I haven't spoken to Chandler in years. I remember the last time I spoke to him, I didn't chastise him, but he was getting into the Hall of Fame and they given a speech. I said, Ron, I love you. Great speech. Wonderful. What about the wife? He forgot to thank the wife. He's like, oh, yeah. Because in our jobs and having trailblazers and having done this, it's a grind. So yeah. I always tell, and this is a lesson for anybody who wants to start a small business. You got to have your family behind you. Because if you don't have your family behind you with the hours necessary to build that small business, you're going to get divorced. You're going to get separated, or you're going to have some kind of problems. You're going to have trouble overcoming because there's a disconnect because you're not on the same page. And here's the problem. My two cents of advice towards these individuals. Every person I've met who wants to start a business believes they can set up the business, get it going. Then it's just a simple 9-to-5 job and they have everybody else working for them. That's not how life works. That works at a corporation that starts a new division because they have the money they can afford to lose. But even then, that's a cutthroat world with people moving up. So it's one of the biggest myths in life. You know, I just want to do what I love and do it 9-to-5. No. No. So always make sure your loved ones, your family, and your friends are on board because you're going to lose friends too because there's something funny about society and human nature. A lot of our peers don't want us to do better than they are doing. Not that they hate us, don't want us to succeed, but there's that.
Well, there's that competition. Let's be honest. Everyone does it for
Well, they don't like it when you're competing to better yourself and they're not.
No, agree.
Feel less of himself.
Yeah, I agree.
All right,
I was going to say, let's move on a little bit because we're running a little short on time. But we know how that was the first bracket. That was every movie in the bracket. The way this wound out was you ended up, out of this start, you ended up with Eight Men Out over The Natural. That was your finals. Eight Men Out over The Natural.
And that was easy, only because when I started looking at the baseball movies, when I saw The Natural, it was like finding that, rediscovering that gold mine. Whereas Eight Men Out, I've never forgotten. But I enjoyed both movies the same. A pure play chick flick, especially for us older guys, when we sit in front of the couch. You know, it's a good one to put on with the wife. And Eight Men Out, it's just a good one if you're a historical and baseball fan and want to see one angle of Shoeless Joe Jackson and those players of that era. Right. How truthful it is, I have no clue, but it left its impact. You, on the other hand, went with two that did not surprise me. People, John's a comedian at heart. He and I off camera argue the libertarian rights and wrongs. And what makes it tougher to argue with John is he has this comedic belief in him. And we all know and we all believe, the average person at least does, that the comedian circle, it's hands off because you can talk and how you want, say what you want, and do what you want. So it was very easy for me to see you have the Bad News Bears and Major League as your final.
Right, yeah.
You know? And it was a no-brainer because at the heart, you are a little bit of various characters from Major League.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely the old pitcher in that movie. Like everyone says that even when I was 21, I was the old pitcher in that movie. So absolutely. The Bad News Bears surprised me because I tried to do it really honestly as I went through the brackets. And I found that the Bad News Bears, first of all, Walter Matthau, for people who may not know, he was the original Oscar Madison in The Odd Couple.
John, how many people even know The Odd Couple?
Exactly. So, well, people
one
might remember Oscar and Felix. Oscar and Felix, right? But Walter Matthau himself was a great comedic actor. He wasn't a stand-up comedian, but he was a really good comedic actor. And I found myself surprised gravitating back to select, as I went through the brackets, The Bad News Bears. A, because it's a comedy, but also because it's a feel-good kids movie that stuck with me from when I was growing up, and it has that baseball theme. So it was close, but I got the Major Leagues out of that, and yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, the only one I had trouble with was Bull Durham versus Moneyball, and even then I didn't really have much trouble.
Yeah, that was definitely the toughest.
These were all easy to me, which I guess it shows in my mind I've already set what I like.
Let me ask you this. Were there any movies you were surprised were not on the list?
You know, I can't tell you offhand, but when I was doing my research, what I found more surprising was looking at top baseball lists and seeing a movie like The Natural not part of that.
If you didn't have any that came to mind, I'll tell you two that came to my mind right away that I was shocked weren't on this list. One was The Pride of the Yankees.
Well, oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, but those were from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, some of these movies. Like Bang the Drum Slowly.
That's the other one from the 70s.
That one hit me hard when I saw it as a kid. In fact, I just don't remember. I think the catcher had cancer or something like that.
Yeah, so, and wait, here's something. And by the way, that's the contemporary movie of, say, The Bad News Bears. They came out around the same era. But let me ask you this. Who played the catcher who had the disease?
Oh, I can't remember. You'll be shocked. Who?
Robert De Niro.
Oh, wow.
And the pitcher who became his best friend was Michael Moriarty, who people might remember was the original
L.A. Law.
Law and Order. Yeah. He was the original D.A. Ben Stone.
He's coming back.
And he's coming. Oh, is he? Good for him. Because
Law and Order's making a comeback. It may have started already.
It did, but he's not on it.
He's a great character actor.
Yeah, but he's not on it. It's Sam Waterston that's on it. But anyway.
No, Sam Waterston plays the DA.
I thought
Michael Moriarty was signed too.
Michael Moriarty quit Hollywood for political reasons.
Yes, he did.
Right? He's more of a conservative and he moved back to Canada. But that movie, Bang the Drum Slowly, came out around the same time as Brian's Song, which was the football version.
We got to do our own, you know?
Right. Brian's Song came out, which was the story of Walter Payton and Brian Piccolo, which was a real-life story. And it was Gale Sayers and James Caan, the guy who played Sonny in The Godfather. So Brian Piccolo was the fullback who used to block for Gale Sayers, the great Chicago running back, he got cancer and died. And that's right. A true story. In the middle of the season, there was nothing they could do.
Right.
Bang the Drum's story is a completely fictionalized drama, but it was clearly made as the baseball version of Brian's song, I think. But anyway, I'm surprised that it wasn't picked in this bracket at all, between that and Pride of the Yankees. But again, if you even tell me that Pride of the Yankees, because it was way old, fair enough. But I'm surprised Bang the Drum Slowly wasn't on there.
Right, right. So there were a couple, like when I came across it. But there's been so many baseball movies. And you're right. I thought Michael Moriarty had – I read something about him in the new Law and Order. It looks like nothing came about. But you're right. He's a very fascinating individual. And we don't have time to talk about him. But he's worth looking up in Wikipedia or IMDb. I actually enjoyed him tremendously in the Clint Eastwood film Pale Rider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was kind of like I don't want to say a remake, but I can't remember the name of the other one where he's already been killed off, comes back, you know, does in the bad guys. Look, I love those kind of movies, you know. Then I'll look at my boss.
Hey, if you're going to be on IMDb looking people up, you might as well look up Big John.
There you go. I have looked you up. Yeah, and I'm like, where's all that money to fund our company?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's move on to our final topic of the night before we talk a little bit about TNT. Pete Rose.
Yes.
And Big John, who is Pete Rose, better known as Charlie Hustle? Give us a couple of highlights in terms of his overall big records.
Yeah, look, I mean, Pete Rose, Hall of Famer, really, if you grew up in the 70s especially, part of the Big Red Machine.
That's right.
Incredible player, typically played infield, but he could play anywhere on the field except pitcher and catcher. But he was basically a third baseman, first baseman for most of his career. Started out with the Reds, moved on to the Phillies. The Reds and the Phillies are basically the two teams he's known for. He had a cup of coffee with the Expos.
Didn't he win a World Series with the Phillies?
Yes, I think he did. It was 1980 that he won with the Phillies. And then he was part of the Big Red Machine in the 70s, obviously. All-time hits leader, I think, past Ty Cobb, I believe. He won the MVP in the National League. He's a three-time series champion. He was like an all-star something like 17 times.
17 times.
He actually was pretty good with the glove, too. He won a couple of Golden Gloves, and he's part of the All-Century team. And
that's impressive because most All-Century teams in anything, with all movies, all action, all whatever, 85% of them tend to be the actors from the last 15, 20 years.
And right, because that's what people remember, right.
Yeah, yeah, but, and he's not been forgotten.
And then the other thing is, equally, after he ended his playing career, he became a major league manager.
So and that's a lot, when he got in trouble.
Yeah, a lot like Joe Torre, Casey Stengel, all these guys who used to be players became managers, Dusty Baker. So he went into managing. Now, to your point, that's where he got in trouble.
Oh, that's when he got caught.
Fair enough. Who knows how long he had been doing it. But, yeah, you're right. He basically he got banned from baseball for life by the commissioner, Peter Uberoth. Was it Uberoth who ended up?
No. Uberoth was one who got it started, but Uberoth was outgoing.
Right.
So he let the nerd, Bart Giamatti.
Giamatti. Yeah, I remember. I wasn't sure who actually kicked him out. But
Giamatti was the National League president who that season, before the allegations came to light, had suspended him for 30 days or 30 games, right. One of the two, for bumping into a ref.
Right. And for people, the other ones that people – I forgot to mention, the other thing Pete Rose was famous for, he was nicknamed Charlie Hustle, is he never gave up on a play. If you walked him on four pitches, he would sprint to first base on a walk. He never took a ground ball off. He was always hustling, and that's why as a manager he put that in his players. He's also famous for, during an all-star game of all things, ending Ray Fosse's career.
That's
Ray
right.
Fosse was a catcher for the Oakland A's, I think. And it's an all-star game, and there was a bang-bang play at the plate. Pete Rose came in like a linebacker, put his shoulder into Fosse, basically injured him, and for all intents and purposes, ended an all-star's career.
Yeah, you know what? And people who believe in karma, this is Pete Rose's karma because that was a cheap play.
Yep.
He never apologized. He still defends it. He was a punk. He was a piece of shit punk in that moment. And I view all this as karma. Well, Pete, you're an asshole. You're an asshole to a lot of people.
I'll agree with you on that. He certainly had. Anybody had it coming, it was him. But anyway, he got caught. Long story short, he got caught making bets on baseball, which was strictly illegal at the time. Even if the betting was legal in Vegas,
no, it's illegal today.
Right, and at the time too. But
all sports across the board, it is illegal for players to bet on those.
Right. Players. So, as a manager. Especially now, when they caught him, his defense was, "I never bet on the Reds to lose."
No. His first defense was, "I bet on all the other sports, but not baseball." Then it came out when he was being tracked down. They figured that Pete Rose was betting every night up to $10,000 a day. Other people were saying he was betting every night was only about $2,000. I believe the latter only because somebody today will believe the former, but the contracts of those eras were not what you see today, and they weren't necessarily guaranteed. So the reason he accepted his ban was because you're right. Go on. He says he bet. Why?
Well, he says he bet on his team to win.
That's right. He said every single bet he made was to win, and that's why he accepted the agreement to accept the permanent ban was because, technically speaking, he couldn't bet whether it was on his team or not. So I think that was his lawyer probably told him, Pete, you're caught. You're busted. There's just, you know, this is all going to come out. And
he was trying to make lemonade out of lemons at that point because in addition to being banned, which was going to happen regardless, because they had like you said, they caught him red-handed betting. Like, there was no doubt that he was betting.
It was Rule 21, misconduct, betting on ball games.
Right, so he was caught. There's no way he could deny it, right?
He did get something out of it, though. What did he get out of it?
Well, I was going to say, what he was trying to do by claiming, whether it's true or not, that he only bet on the Reds to win, he was trying to save his public persona. He was trying to save his PR work. He was trying to save his off the field.
He was trying to save his career as a human being.
Yeah, because he wanted to make money as endorsements and stuff like that as a spokesperson, which to some extent he did. You know,
not really. Not because he was actually blackballed there and lost a lot of deals. I mean, he was tainted. Remember, John, this was an era still at that time when we were all in agreement. He's wrong. It's illegal. It was the sanctity and the purity of the game. Now, opinions has changed with society as we've moved forward. But back then, nobody.
There's no justification. Just like with in football, it was Alex Karras, Paul Hornung, I think. There were three.
Oh yeah, football. Paul Hornung and Alex Karras in the 60s, but they were the last ones to get the slap on the wrist.
Right, they got suspended for a year or two, I think, but they were allowed.
Yeah, they were allowed. That was it.
But they were allowed to come back.
They were the last ones. That was the last time that's happened. Yeah. Now, real quick for people, Pete Rose has applied for reinstatement. Pete Rose may have been under the belief after a certain amount of time he would apply for reinstatement and it passed. Bart Giamatti came out forcefully, said we never agreed to that. He may think that, but that's not the case, and we're not going to sit there and just approve him. In essence, that's what Giamatti said. Ironically, Giamatti died like 5 or 8 months later, one of the shortest tenures as baseball commissioner. In 1992, Rose applied for reinstatement under Faye Vincent, who was an asshole, who replaced Giamatti. No. 98, they didn't even have to say no. They just ignored the application. In 1998, Rose applied for reinstatement under the corrupt commissioner, Bud Selig. In March 2003, and he's corrupt because he knew there was a steroid situation in baseball, a bad one. But baseball was hurting so badly, they put the health of players ahead of – I know you believe what you believe, but he put the health of his players ahead of the game – or he put the game ahead of the health of players. In 2003, Selig acknowledged he was considering Rose's application, and that was all we heard. In 2015, Rose's representatives applied for reinstatement. Now, Rob Manfred was a commissioner. He actually came out with information stating why. Rose is living in Vegas. He showed no remorse, and we still forbid players, managers, and coaches to gamble on baseball, whether legal or otherwise, and Rose, by that time, was openly legally betting. Rose also didn't have a mature understanding of his wrongful conduct and the damage it caused, is what Manfred said. And I agree. I believe Rose should be reinstated, but Manfred was absolutely right on all counts. So you couldn't really argue. You know, I think as fans, we were just hoping somebody would go, okay, you paid your penance. But Manfred was – I think the fact that Rose still thought he didn't do anything wrong – I think that was a major problem. So where does this put in Big John regarding the Hall of Fame? Will we ever see him in the Hall of Fame? Can he even qualify to be on the ballot?
Well, he can't legally. Whether it's right or not, I don't know.
Well, he's barred from Hall of Fame eligibility.
I think that's horrible. It's one thing to be banned from the game, but his accomplishments were his accomplishments. You can't even make the argument that there's proof that he gambled while he was a player. So if you want to keep him out on his managerial record, that's fine. But he's the all-time hits leader. He's the all-time leader in games played.
You're saying is what he did on the field is all we should be looking at.
For this particular thing, yes. Because unlike steroids, where you can make the argument that, like, oh, Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, all these guys set their home run records on the juice, and the juice was illegal. Fair enough. Like you, or Roger Clemens. Yeah, like, I agree. Fair enough. There might be doubt. Leave it up to each voter. But to ban someone for something he did after his career as a player, like I said, if you want to end his, like, if you want to vote on his eligibility up for his playing career and exclude the managerial part, fine, because he gets in as a player. He probably wouldn't get in as a manager, but he gets in as a player. Without a doubt, he's a first ballot, almost unanimous choice as
a
player.
He's arguably one of the greatest baseball players of any era.
Agreed. Wow. I mean, there was nothing he couldn't do.
Now, so, has he ever admitted to the gambling, though, Big John?
I don't think so. I mean, he's been, like you said, he reads his apologies like, well, then, like
I got breaking news for you, brother. He actually wanted to promote his book. So yeah, right about the Hall of Fame in 2004, through his book, he came out and said he publicly admitted to betting on baseball and other sports while managing the Reds and playing for them. So actually, he came clean. And the belief is he thought coming clean at that point would ease his entry, would allow him back in. But it would cause a backlash. Everybody looked at him as, you're doing this for your book. Yeah. It's all about money with you, Charlie Hustle.
And he probably was.
It's all about money.
Yeah, and he probably was. Look, I understand why they're not making him eligible, but at the same time, should he be in the Hall of Fame? Yes. Should he be eligible or not? I leave that. I can't work myself up one way or another over it, to be honest with you.
The part of that is because it's been so long. I'm sure when you were younger, you probably had more opinionated thoughts.
Well, listen, like I said, like I'm a libertarian, I believe in free association. It's their club. It's the Hall of Fame. It's baseball's club. They get to set their own rules, right?
And that's what separates you from your leftist libertarian buds who believe their beliefs should be enacted out of because they're the right ones. But, right. John, let's move on to gambling today. I'm going to step in here because this is my domain there for quite a while, being involved in the FSTA, sure. Being part of that core. So how did we get to this path? We got to this path because the Fantasy Sports Trade Association, now known as the Fantasy Sports Gaming Association, may as well say Gambling Association,
right.
Created a carve-out. We fought for that carve-out.
Right.
John Kyle, senator from Arizona, was after our industry. During that whole carve-out, big picture, my fear was simple. I kept telling people, this is eventually going to be corrupted because an outside party is going to force gambling using this carve-out. And that's what actually happened. Daily Fantasy Sports eventually made that happen. They abused the carve-out. They pretended they were fantasy, kept saying it's a game of skill. Look, poker's a game of skill. The only gambling that I'll sit there as an analogy would say is no game of skill is the one where you throw the ball and it hits red and black. You know, that's it. But poker, blackjack, all those are games of skill. So I was never in the camp that said fantasy sports is a game of skill. That's why it's not gambling. Now, I went along with it because it was a way to get a carve out. But the truth of the matter, fantasy sports, traditionally speaking, is not gambling because an average fantasy sports player will spend $100 to win $10. It's about bragging rights for us. And that's why the niche struggled for corporate type in growth, meaning the revenue wasn't really there like they wanted. With Daily Fantasy, you have to create a deposit first. A deposit goes hand in hand with gambling, meaning you got to give us your money first, and that's what we're going to pull from when you lose. Because in gambling, you always lose eventually. There are a handful of people who can win consistently, and they're the studs because they use algorithms. It's corrupt, but it's legal. So what turned this around was the SCOTUS decision we've talked about in past podcast in New Jersey that said the federal government has no right to dictate to a state whether they can or can't have gambling, sports betting, horse racing, highlight, whatever. And that's where we're at now. Because of that now, money has been heavily invested and has been for years into daily fantasy sites. They may be making money now, but back early on, they weren't. And I believe you're still going to struggle because you don't need as much knowledge to do a parlay of teams versus you do a players. It's pretty much that simple. Where it will thrive, I think, is what you guys call prop bets. And again, I don't gamble because I have an addictive personality, and if I gambled, I'd be broke. It's that simple, you know. So NBA has led the way with a gambling stance, meaning they want gambling. They're a corrupt system in itself. They'll support everything bad about China and not say one word. Why? Because of money. They're the worst of the lot, but the other leagues are just as bad. They just weren't as vocal as the NBA. Baseball has made deals with these daily fantasy sites that have gambling in stadiums, that have partnerships with these gamblings. The only change is MLB's gambling policy is it's still illegal for players, but everything else is a free-for-all because all they care about is money. They've embraced the gambling industry, advertising on telecasts, and planned permanent sports books at baseball stadiums. Brings us to what, John? I'll let you take it from here. Who is Charlie Blackmon, and what did he do?
Well, he's a Rockies outfielder, and he was given permission, if I've got it correctly, to sign the deal with one of the daily fantasy sites.
All right, real quick, does he really legally, we're not lawyers, but logically speaking, does he really need permission when baseball teams individually and the league itself has signed partnership deals with all these sports books?
Well, to the extent that if he's bound by contract to do so, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Look, morally,
yeah.
I think there is an argument to be made about players refraining from gambling in games that they participate in.
Well, time out, John. It's still illegal. He can endorse them and advertise, market promotions for them, but he still cannot bet.
I was going to say that. You kind of cut me off. I was going to say, I still see the argument for not betting in games that you're involved with, that you have a direct hand in influencing, but an endorsement deal has nothing to do with that, right? In theory. Taking somebody's money to say, I like DraftKings, or I like FanDuel, or I like Caesars Sports, whatever, that is, I think, should be okay. There shouldn't be any deal. Now, especially if he discloses it, that there shouldn't be a problem. Now, for example, we saw this was a problem when Ian Rappaport, a fellow journalist, right, made a deal that the NFL had a side deal with a company.
Right.
And they actually suspended him from their media properties because he works for NFL media. They suspended him from his media properties for like 2-3 weeks. His Twitter went silent, and I think it was about that company that – the Manscaped or something like that, the one that Gronkowski was using. Now, apparently, there was like some sort of deal that none of us knew about that only certain players would be allowed to, you know. So whatever the case was, he got suspended for taking advertising money. And again, he's not a player. He didn't gamble, blah, 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 blah. This was just a violation. So we are not always privy to what the contracts say you can and cannot endorse.
Right. I think what's happening now, Big John, is the companies are trying to be on the down low. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
But eventually the players associations, and this is I loathe the players associations like I do most unions, because it's not about a winning partnership anymore. It's about screwing the fan over, because the more money put into them and the game itself means higher tickets. Yeah, yes. Which is another reason I think baseball's slowly going to wither away. But that said, I think you're right. You had those ideas and all, but all this crap will come out through collective bargaining, because they do represent all the players.
Eventually.
And the big players don't want to be ostracized. It's kind of like, remember that show Playmakers on ESPN decades ago? One of the best sports shows I've ever seen. When the running back was getting all the limelight, hogging all the credit, then he crossed the line of pretty much going, it's me. And then the following game, the offensive line was
blocking
for him. A little lackluster with the blocking, you know? And that's how it would be in those terms. Obviously, maybe not the best analogy, but the point being is, They are a unit amongst themselves, the players. So I think all this will become legal. I don't think the betting part will eventually become legal. But when they asked Pete Rose about black men and gambling today, Rose gave a quote to Sportico. I don't know if Sportico is a website only or if it's an actual media company. There's nothing illegal in that, is there? It's just a perception, like when I was caught. I just came along at the wrong time. I made a mistake, and I paid for it. I bet on my own team to win. If I was around today, nobody would think anything of it. This goes to Manfred Mann, and this is what validates Manfred Mann. He has no clue at what he did, regardless of what era. And the reason I say that is, if I was around today, nobody would think anything of it. Yes, they would, Pete. Yeah. You bet on freaking games. This guy's being endorsed. You see, and that just shows a complete disconnect from Rose and what he did to how it relates today. Not a complete, not 100% disconnect, but enough for me to go, Pete, you still don't get it.
I agree with you. It was, he's just totally self-unaware. Completely self-aware.
Okay. Now, man, Big John, we've really eaten up the clock with some great storytelling and topics. So let's close this one out because I still want to get the TNT and I'll let you take over. But looking at everything today and what's happened to Pete Rose, what's still happening to Pete Rose, and what's happening now with gambling and the opening of the doors and the floodgates, with the one caveat, technically it's still illegal for players to gamble. But with that said, is Pete Rose going to become, or is he becoming, the face of Major League Baseball and professional sports hypocrisy, the poster child for you guys are hypocrites? Look at this guy.
No.
You, and why is that?
Because you can't. Sometimes you have to view things in according to their contemporary environment, meaning
the big picture.
Well, it's not just the big picture. It's the P. Rose broke the rules. He knew he was breaking the rules when the rules were in place. The fact that 40 years, roughly, because it's been almost 40 years, right? That almost 30, 40 years after the fact that he broke the rules, now we're thinking of changing the rules. It doesn't change the fact that he had no idea things were going to change, right? He didn't know any of that. He knowingly and willingly and very calculatedly broke the rules. So I don't see him ever becoming the face of baseball. If he's lucky.
No. I was about he's the face of the hypocrisy of baseball and gambling.
No, I don't view it that way either. No, I don't think baseball.
I think you're wrong, Big John. I mean, I agree with you because you've done what we've talked about before. You're looking at history in the context of history.
Yeah.
Not looking at history and judging them by our standards today. But he will become the face of that hypocrisy as gambling opens up more and more. And I fully believe to avoid that, he will be reinstated before we die. He may not be alive, but before our death.
If you let me talk 2 seconds longer. I was going to say, they might give in after he dies. They're not going to give him the satisfaction. So after Pete Rose dies, they may posthumously say he's in the Hall of Fame.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that because of where we're headed with gambling. Dude, gambling's – we're getting ready to vote on a sports book deal here in California in this election. So I don't think it has anything to do with how Pete Rose is perceived as much as we're going to swing so far towards the open gambling and all that, that it just let him in. But you're right. I agree with you, and you're right. Okay, the final question, and you kind of already answered it. In terms of where do you stand with Big John, where do you stand with Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, in or out? I think you answered that already.
He should be in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that certain things are so egregious that like murder and things like that. And maybe the gambling falls on that line, so I won't argue it, but I'm with you. Just because of his exceptionalism, no proof of his play shows, like Shoeless Joe Jackson shows. Yeah. All right. Big John, the floor is yours. Talk to us about TNT, the Tom and Jerry. Is it the Tom and Jerry show? What is it? What's that all about?
All right, so TNT, I'll take credit for the name, not for the content. As you know, we on the prior podcast, we interviewed Tim McCullough, who was an OG Sports Grumblings editor-in-chief. He was one of the first guys I hired, always one of my favorites to work with. Great, great guy. And after his appearance on our show, he kind of got hooked. He had two appearances so far. He kind of got hooked, and we kind of started talking about seeing if we could get him to come on to do a show.
John, though, real quick, what is Tim? What validates him as one of the best in the industry?
Oh, he's one of the great baseball prognosticators. He was voted the most accurate fantasy baseball.
Not voted. He won it outright.
I'm sorry, not voted. He actually, you're correct. He actually won it for a three-year period. He was the most accurate baseball prognosticator as voted on by Fantasy,
Fantasy Pros.
Yes, fantasypros.com. So his chops are there. He's also an FSWA award-winning writer. He was nominated a couple times when he still wrote for Sports Grumblings on the first pass round. So he's a talented guy, good guy too. And so he agreed. We're getting him set up. So we're going to give him about a month to get set up, to get all the details worked out, to sign the contracts, whatever needs to get done. And he decided to do a show centered mainly around baseball, but it'll also include pop culture, much like this show, pop culture and a little bit of politics and whatnot. And he has as his partner his friend Tom, who is going to be joining him. So they were trying to think of a name for the show. And half asleep, as you know, William, I'm up till 3, 4 in the morning every night working. He sent me a text and he said, what should we call the show? And I said, well, why don't we call it TNT, the Tim and Tom Show, and he loved it. He thought that was the greatest thing ever. He started, you know, goes, you got to hook me up with that, the TNT Show. Me and Tom will do it, you know. So,
and the caveat with Tom is that politically he leans which way?
He leans away from you is what he leans, you know. He's
what I would call a liberal, not a leftist. Of course, yeah. We don't know him that well yet, so we'll find out.
Right. He already told us. Ladies and gentlemen, William does his research, as you've heard him say a lot. So he looked into Tom, and he wanted to know if he was willing to fit into our
culture,
our culture in terms of where we all stand. Now, you have to understand, we're inclusive. We're like, we'll argue with anybody.
Exactly. Just because you're a liberal. If you treat us with respect, we'll treat you with respect. You get ugly, there's the door.
And Tom, apparently, he's a good guy as well. He's also knowledgeable, also a baseball guy. Tim vouches for him, which me being Tim's former boss and Tim's former editor, absolutely. You know, his word is good enough for me. William signed off on it as well. So, coming soon. That's where I'll leave it right now. Coming soon. TNT, the Tim and Tom Show, right here on Sports Grumblings. They'll be talking baseball at least once a week. And we'll see where we go from there. But everyone keep an eye out for TNT, the Tim and Tom Show. It's going to be explosive, William.
And for the fantasy people, these are two analytic guys, and I did have some spoke with them, and my take to them was, look, what makes sports fun is when you can talk about it in detail that the fantasy player leaves that show going, damn, I didn't know that, because at the end of the day, for myself, we became so adept on the NFL side. We were seen as NFL insiders by some people and NFL analysts. But it all started with the digging of the data with fantasy. So he's going to be some good stuff. We're going to keep him tied down a little bit to baseball early on, get the feel out. But TNT is coming its way. And with that, Big John, another show, another heavy show. Big John and I are still fairly new at this, but we are learning. And we urge you to visit sportsgrumblings.com. Please support our show. Share our podcast. You have been listening to Points on the Board. And I keep saying it, but there's going to be more articles coming up. And with that, John, until next time, tell America good night.
Good night, America.